Well, dear listener, I'm an old school music journo. My first job in journalism was in street press in Sydney when street press was a thing many, many moons ago. So it's an absolute pleasure in the short run of this show to have my next guest on the show for an extended chat. Really great pleasure. His name is Andrew Farris. Now, many of you will know him, of course, as one of the co-founders and key members of In Excess. But of course, he's done so much more than that, from songwriting to producing and most recently releasing his very first debut album. Andrew Farris, welcome to The King Review.
Oh, thanks, Gavin. And how are you going there?
Look, we're going okay. Certainly, I think we were just talking off air about Cairns. Certainly doing it tough in many sectors because of the tourism, but look, you know, we're a resilient bunch up here, that's for sure. So there's a little bit of positivity on the horizon. Now, Andrew, it's hard to know where to start with you given your significant career in so many aspects, but let's talk about the new album first of all. It is a slightly different direction in terms of your output, much more country focused. Talk to us a little bit about the inspiration for that sort of that new direction, if you like, in sound for you.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, obviously for people who know a bit about me, my background, I've been mainly a songwriter, and that sort of started with me in my teens, and I've kept writing songs my whole life. Well, over the years, you know, some of the songs that I was writing, it wasn't so much that I wasn't happy with the songs, it's just they didn't suit the projects I was working on. So what I would do was I'd shelve some of them and then sort of really not quite know what to do with them. And then I realized I had quite a lot of these songs after some time's gone by. So I started to re-record them. And the closest singer was me, you know. And then I thought, I'll get someone that really knows what they're doing later on to sing all these, you know. But as it transpired, it was from my wife, Marlena, she's from Dayton in Ohio, and her family, you know, they don't live that far, really, from Nashville in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So even though I was re-recording some of these songs at my home farm studio in northwest New South Wales, where I live, but also in Nashville, and it was the Nashville recording engineers who started saying to me, well, we like your voice. What's wrong with your voice? And I'm like, well, it's me, you know. And they're like, well, we just keep singing. We don't mind your voice. And then I realized that these are country guys, and they'd be telling me, look, you know, we have some great singers around if you need them, you know. And then I realized that they're comfortable listening to these songs. So that was part of my journey. And then secondly, I started thinking more about, well, if I was ever going to make an album, how would I go about it? And I thought, I really didn't start out to say, I'm going to make an album. I just started tracking all these songs. What happened next was I took a trip with my wife, Marley, down to the Mexican border, where we went to a wilderness area called the Chiricahua Mountains, right in the Mexican border, where right in the corner of New Mexico and Arizona meet Mexico. And the tumultuous history of that area with the Apache Indians, you had the U.S. Cavalry, of course you had the Mexican people across the border, and the old days of Mexican army, and then you had you know, Tombstone up the road with the cowboys and the outlaws, and then of course these poor settler people trying to make some peace and life amongst all this chaos with all these people. But the thing that really opened my eyes was that we did it on horseback. We rode for 6 hours a day, 6 days straight. It wasn't like a little pony. It wasn't like a little pony ride, you know. It was full on. But what I discovered, and because I live in the bush and I'm sort of comfortable with livestock and horses and whatever, and I was riding around out there, and I sort of thought to myself, I was riding through some of these canyons, and these are wilderness areas. You know, we have this image of the United States as always being full of big cities, which it is, and it's a very highly populated country. But the wilderness area of that area really captured my imagination. I was riding through places like Skeleton Canyon. You could see where there were stagecoach routes still in the ground. I don't mean four-wheel drive tracks. I mean, and then it really hit home to me. And we were riding through a place called Apache Pass. We rode up to Cochise's stronghold, where Cochise could see the U.S. cavalry riding towards him and kicking up dust so he knew how to get out of the way, you know.
And I mean, they're almost song titles and songs in themselves. Some of that description, Skeleton County.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what happened to me. So I went back to Nashville And my mind was on fire as a songwriter, and I suddenly, I had serious inspiration from that trip. And we went back again too. I even took my older children back to show them this wilderness area, because it's beautiful but desolate and probably a little bit dangerous. And there's a lot of sad history there. But for me, you're right. What happened was it pushed a button with me. And when I got back to Nashville, even though I've had incredibly fortunate, songwriting experiences with some very, very talented, younger and older, very, very clever songwriters in the country music genre. My mind was just like, they're like, "What? Hey, Andrew, what do you want to write about?" And I said, I hesitated for a minute. I looked at them because I thought, they're not going to like this. I said, I want to write about the Old West.
Yeah.
And they kind of looked at me, hey man, it's kind of moved on a little bit. And I'm like, well, I know, I get it, I understand, but I just said, I want to write about this stuff, And then the more I thought about it, how similar it is to our early 19th century history in Australia. And I started thinking, about this desolate area where there's desert and it's hot and it's gritty and dry and dusty. And I just saw Australia. And at the same time, I thought, why doesn't anyone write about this stuff now? What's going on, And it was really that outlaw country thing that hit me,
And was that almost a weird experience? You think about, you've been in music to one degree or another since the 70s. I mean, as you said, you were writing songs even younger than that. But then you talked earlier about singing, and it was, you almost avoided it for whatever reason for so long. Was that a weird experience for you with this album, in that you were encouraged to sing by people around you, and it works?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate that. I really do. Because I was really nervous about singing in front of people. And, as a songwriter, I'll sing, ideas or whatever. And, but I never thought of the idea of, fantasizing about being Tom Jones or something. That was just, I've worked with Tom, and that, some of those people are just spooky singers, let alone the singer, that we had with In Excess of Michael Hutchence. My God,
Yeah, it's pretty hard. To compete with some of those, talent.
You got it. And so I just never tried to compete. I never thought about it. But what I realized was the country music genre that I've been writing in, and working with people in, it's not the same sort of thing. And there's very different stylization to a lot of it. A lot of it, it's really about storytelling. And I thought, I think I can do this. I don't need to do, vocal gymnastics. I just have to sing the songs, tell the stories, And that's kind of where my adventure took me with that,
And there's almost a directness to your debut album, and I think that the directness stretches back to the lineage of country music. Of course, Johnny Cash, one of my favorites, it was beautiful almost in its simplicity and its directness, and I think that comes through in your debut album as well. I think listeners, of course, associate you and remember all of the work that you and the team did at In Excess. I was interested to read, in fact, that at the height of In Excess success, that's quite a mouthful, at the height of your global success, you, in fact, co-wrote all but one of the band's top 40 hits in the US, which I'm sure most listeners may not be aware of. I mean, that is a staggering achievement. And which you'd mentioned, of course, Michael Hutchence there. Can you talk a little bit about the connection that you two had when you're writing these incredible global hits? When we know about some classic songwriting duos, Lennon and McCartney and Jagger and Richards and many, many others. Was there that dynamic between the two of you when you were creating some of these hits?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, we met as really just high school mates. And in fact, our first sort of friendship, if you like, was about because Michael got into motorbikes, and I thought that was all pretty cool. But later on, music came along and, of course, girls and all the rest of it. But I think it was more about, to me, with our songwriting, where I think our connection is that a lot of people probably don't really understand is that we came from very different angles. I mean, Michael was really always very clever with his poetry and his prose and his lyrics and things. And I wrote lyrics too, but I was also a musician. Michael didn't actually play a physical instrument.
That's right.
And so, when the two of us sat down and worked together, it wasn't like we were competitive. Like, I know what it's like to sit in a room with someone who is a very good musician, you know, and they could be a good lyricist, but sometimes it can be slightly competitive because you both have very similar skill sets, you know. But when I was working with Michael, it was sort of never really like that. And I think that was one of our great successes as a songwriting team, is we both came at it from very different angles. And we talked about it even not that long before he passed away. And I'm very grateful that I have those memories of him that aren't sad and tragic. They're just, you know, we had a very special kind of connection as you know, songwriters and together. And we wrote for a common purpose. It wasn't like, oh, let's just see if we can write a big hit for some other artist. That wasn't the point of it. The point of it was we knew how good In Excess was as a band, and we had these opportunities opening up for us internationally, and we took them, you know. We did it.
And do you still reflect on Michael? Do you miss him even to this day?
Yeah, of course I do. I miss him more. I miss the cheeky, funny side of him. I mean, there's so much that goes on, talked about, you know, a lot of other parts of his life, but for me, I just miss that guy. Had a, you know, a funny sense of humor. He could be a bit naughty, but he was also charismatic and very bohemian. You know, he was the kind of guy who could just literally live out of a suitcase, and he didn't sort of necessarily pine for a base anywhere. He was, in fact, he was most happy when we were just rolling around. He even said it. You know, I just love, you know, touring and running around all over the world. Love it. You know, so, and that was where he was at home. You know?
Now, speaking of home, you live on a property just outside of Tamworth, I understand. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, like you said, you've toured the world, you've recorded in Nashville, you could really live anywhere in the world. Why? But talk to us. Describe your property and your lifestyle there.
Sure. Well, I'll pick up from where I left just before. You know, during those years with In Excess, we actually, as a touring act, worked in 52 different countries. And we lived most of our life touring, you know, one country or another. But most of those times when you're touring, you're either living in a tour bus together, or you're in hotels. And they can be, you know, sort of either really poor and cheap hotels or the best hotel in the world, but you're still in a concrete box. And then, so eventually, you know, it occurred to me as I was rolling around doing all this that what I was really missing was just bush, like nature, and not even big cities, not even, you know, the luxuries that those things offer. And we have some amazing things like that in Australia and our coastline and our beautiful suburbs and, you know, whatever. You know, you can live an absolute salubrious life. But for me, what I began to discover was that I bought an old dairy farm, for example, and I started to do it up. I had no idea what I was doing.
Really? Okay. That was an adventure.
And it was about 130 acres, and there was an old lady I bought it off, and, you know, she was in her mid-80s, and I don't think she could handle it anymore. Her husband had passed away, and I bought it off, and I had no idea what I was doing, but I was sort of rebuilding everything. And then I discovered I had a real passion for it. The funny thing was, is that someone asked me not that long ago, am I interested in engineering? And I kind of knew what they meant. They didn't mean sound engineering. They meant how things are constructed. And I said, well, that's I am, actually. I find it interesting how a bridge is made or a song is constructed or whatever it is, you know, how things are made. And that's where my connection came with the agricultural world, where I suddenly thought, I like all this. I like the machines, I like the livestock, I like the science of agriculture. I find it really fascinating, actually.
And now, in terms of promoting and playing gigs for the new album, is there any chance, can you extend any hope to our listeners in North Queensland about a potential visit for some shows in our way at some point soon?
Mate, I would love to do that. You know, to get up there and play for everybody. In fact, go interstate. Gavin, I absolutely love to do that. And in fact, was fully intending to do that, but we had to postpone shows when the pandemic or the COVID virus kept popping up. And then the state borders were doing what they felt was the right thing to do, and they keep shutting the borders. Well, the problem is you go to carry a band and support staff and people to help make the show great, and everything gets shut down on the drop of a hat. It's sort of technically almost impossible to do that. So I'm just hoping and praying that we can move into a sort of borderless, you know, Australia, if you like, if I can put it that way.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? For hospitality, for entertainment, for tourism. You know, there's lots of other industries that are affected besides the entertainment industry. And my heart goes out to those people. I have a lot of empathy for those people, you know.
Well, I had Amy Shark on the show a few weeks ago, and she was quite strong, quite critical of the lack of government support for the arts sector. You know, a lot of other industries were supported and propped up, but it seems that, you know, entertainers, and not just the entertainers, of course, the roadies, as you said, the support crew, the people who put on festivals, we saw Blues Fest, you know, closed literally with 24 hours notice, a disgrace, I think, for that festival. Your quick thoughts on what governments have and haven't done for the industry that you love and perform in?
Well, all I can say is that I think the authorities are doing what they feel is the right thing to be doing for everybody, not just one particular, you know, section of the community. And I think that's where it's obviously invariably going to divide people, because people are frustrated. And of course, they want to feed their families. They want to operate, you know, the way they were. And I understand all that. I think, though, you know, I'm not medically trained. It's not my area of expertise. I write some songs, you know, I'm writing country songs now, and I like to get out and play around. And actually I performed with Amy Shark at the NRL Grand
right,
Final.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. And she wanted to cover a song that I'd written with Michael called Never Tear Us Apart. And it was, I remember when we went to sing it together, it literally didn't stop raining from the moment that we went out there till the moment we stopped. But there was something sort of really, you know, I felt really fortunate, given the climate that we're in, to be able to actually do that with her, you know,
amazing,
on stage.
Amazing. Well, just the mention of that song title, Andrew, gives me shivers, because it is one of the most beautiful songs written anywhere in the world, not just by Australian musicians, an absolute all-time classic. Look, Andrew Farris, there's so much that I could talk to you about. I do know you have to run for your next interview, but congratulations on the new album, people. It's available on all, of course, all the streaming services, and no doubt in physical old school format as well. Congratulations, Andrew, and we really hope to see you performing a gig or three in Cairns and the far north sometime soon. Thank you very much for being on the King Review.
Good on you, Gavin. Okay, take care, mate. Safe travels.